The Reserve Pool, Episode 24, A Rare Conversation. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Episode 24 of The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters and all the people who love to play it. This is Dave here.
And this is Evan. Katie is absent. I think she fell into a time-space anomaly. We'll probably see her again next week.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, really. I mean, we thought she was lost in time and history. Then we, you know, it was where in the world is she? But today, time just got away from her. And as it, you know, tends to when you're dealing with time vortices. And there we are.
Time got away from her, and therefore she got away from time.
Exactly. It's paradoxical. It's best if you don't spend too much time thinking about it.
Right.
Yes. So, Evan, I have been having some fun playing board games lately. How about you?
I have also been having some fun playing board games lately.
Well, it sounds like we have had a very similar time. What have you been up to?
I got a chance to oversee a game of Archipelago, which I would have loved to play. It's one of those games that has way too much going on, and you love it for it. There's some secret objectives, including it's not only are your objectives secret, but like when the game ends is also secret.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then there's like 18,000 different little pieces and like 14 tracks to keep track of. Like, the natives are rebelling, but you also need workers from them, and then you have to make cows, and maybe you want to have a peninsula of pineapples. And
that sounds like the best peninsula ever. I am a huge fan of pineapples. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I've heard of that one. I've heard the Secret Cabal talk about it a lot, but I've never had the opportunity to see or play it. I played recently. I introduced Cash and Guns to my game group. Have you ever seen or played this one?
I have heard of it, but I have not played it.
Oh, I'll tell you, it's fun. It's not that expensive. Everybody, I recommend that you get this. It's just stupid fun. So Cash and Guns, for one, the included among the components are 8 foam guns, like pistols. Think about every movie that you've ever seen where there's a whole bunch of people pointing guns at everybody else over a table of loot. That's pretty much what this one emulates. It's a lot of fun. You have a little
Mexican
bit of
Mexican standoff.
The Mexican standoff is exactly what it is. It's, you know, I think that situation comes up just to, you know, maybe once or twice in Reservoir Dogs as well. But yeah, it's that you're pointing guns at people and you're, you know, trying to bluff them and freak them out. You get to shout "Banzai" as a part of the game, which is pretty cool. And then you're divvying out the loot for everybody who's still standing at the end of the round. Very, very fun. And I'll tell you, when you do the count to three and then everybody's pointing guns at everybody else, there, if you're playing with the right group, there is tension in the air. It is really, really cool. It's just a lot of fun, and I definitely recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, that's what I've been considering.
I'd sign off on it. Definitely. I think you would love it.
Otherwise, I've been looking to play Warhammer 40,000 Conquest, but alas, the people I was going to play it with did not show up for my last gaming meeting. So hopefully this week.
Yeah, I ended up... they're not really comparable games other than that they're both in the LCG model. I ended up picking up Doomtown Reloaded by AEG, which is an expanded card game because Fantasy Flight licenses the LCG name. Of course, a relaunch, reimagining of the old Doomtown TCG, which I know had a lot of love in the late 90s. It's really cool. It involves a lot of tactical movement, not just like card play. And it has that Weird West theme. So it's, you know, cowboys and criminals and cops and robbers and everything, but also like...
And hopefully not Will Smith.
No, but magic and steampunk and everything is all in there too. No, no Will Smith, thank goodness. It's not the Wild Wild West. But it's a lot of fun. It's definitely heavy. I don't think it's as confusing as, say, Netrunner, though I know others have said that they have a hard time wrapping their head around it. But the big thing that turned the tables for me, because I was really looking at the Warhammer 40K one, I find it interesting. I may still pick it up just for the base box. But the big thing for me is that you can do absolutely zero deck building within the Warhammer 40K Conquest base box, whereas in Doomtown putting together the four pre-constructed decks and having those all assembled at the same time, I still have about 70 extra cards. So I can, like, kind of fiddle with the pre-constructed ones, or I could, like, build with pretty much whatever I want out of this. And that's really cool. But Warhammer, I hear a lot of people say that this is maybe the first LCG where you arguably need three core sets to have a full experience, not just two.
Yeah, going through it, I mean, they advise a starter game where you sort of just use all the cards for a particular faction plus a few of the neutrals, but there's only five neutral cards, so you know, yeah. you don't have a lot to pick from. And so if you're going to make a 50 card deck out of that, you're going to have to pull pretty much everything out of the faction you get to choose as your buddy faction.
Yeah.
So,
Evan, do you think that's one that you're going to be investing in, the whatever they're calling their war packs or their, you know, their monthly...
I'm going to follow it at least for a little while. I really want to get to the point where you can play Necrons and Tyranids, as those are my favorite races. And unfortunately both are the expansion races, so Necrons will be interesting. They can pick from any side.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, and I like...
And Tyranids can't pick from anyone at all because they are horrible, everything-eating bug monsters.
I do kind of... Yeah, they're sort of like... things like the buggers, I guess, in Ender's Game. Or maybe... what's it from Starship Troopers?
Maybe a little... I think maybe a little bit more like the bugs from Starship Troopers. They have more of an alien feel to them, but that's okay. More of the visual design. They're not actually like aliens at all.
Oh, very cool. The theming is interesting to me. I might get it just so you and I can play over Skype once or twice. I mean, I find the game interesting, just, I don't know. Yeah. But people aren't here to listen to us talk about this stuff. They're here to listen to us talk.
Maybe they are.
Well, maybe a little bit.
No.
I could do a whole separate podcast just about this kind of stuff, and I'd love to, but, you know, time is a factor here.
We'll have to clone you. That always works well.
Oh, it does, totally. My favorite Calvin and Hobbes book, Scientific Progress Goes Boink. But nonetheless, let's move on and discuss the new contest.
Yes, we in fact have a new contest. It is for OP Month 4, featuring Teleport. But thanks to the generosity of... Ray Anderson? I think it was Ray Anderson?
It was Ray.
Okay. Thanks to the generosity of Ray Anderson, we have a whole bunch of extra basic actions, specifically Teleport, which is very topical for this month, Rally, and Teamwork. So we're kicking up the prizes a bit. In addition to our normal four Teleports, which will be our runner-up prizes this time, we have... four packages of Rally, Teamwork, and Teleport for our second prize winners, and one grand prize winner will get those three basic actions and Colossus Phoenix Force, the prize for the month 4 OP. So if you want a shot at the goods, send an email to contest@thereservepool.com with the subject TRP OP Month 4 Contest. And for your part for this, we'd like you to describe what Marvel event, or if you must, DC, or
yes.
I guess Yu-Gi-Oh, though maybe Katie will know, I don't know.
Yeah, or, hey, maybe D&D, do you want D&D, Dragonlance, D&D, Dice Smash? I totally do.
And please, before everyone comes in and say, oh man, Planescape, yes, we can feel that. but yeah, what your favorite Marvel or DC or whatever event that you'd really like to see made into a Dice Masters set, like Avengers versus X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, though that's not really an event, and the upcoming Age of Ultron.
Definitely. Yeah, this is a cool one. I really like this idea. For my part, especially going by the folks that entered in the contest last time, I think that we will probably see a lot of people say Maximum Carnage for this one, and I am totally down with that. I would love to see a Maximum Carnage Dice Master set. it would allow you the opportunity to put in so many characters. I mean, that is a big event with a lot of interesting, you know, some secondary people and, of course, some primary ones. I mean, I love the part, Maximum Carnage, spoilers for a moment, just in case. I mean, the event's like a decade plus old, but still.
Two decades old, my gosh. I haven't read it, so.
Oh, really? Oh, never mind. I won't do that.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
We have a service we must render.
When Captain America appears in that, that's one of my favorite moments. I'm not even a big Captain fan, but it was just a really cool way that he came into the comic series there. But in any case, so many characters, I really think enable exactly what they're looking for here. Big cast, lots of heroes, lots of villains, different affiliations. You know, you have Venom kind of coming around to be with the White Hats for a change. And that's kind of like my favorite Venom, is the anti-hero Venom. From especially Maximum Carnage. Fantastic. I love it, and I hope we see that soon. But we're picking randomly, so just because I want to see that, or on the DC side, I would want to see, like, Infinite Crisis. That doesn't mean that, you know, it's going to help you win.
Yep.
Though, saying, like, a made-up event like the Battle for Sue Storm probably won't help you win either.
Nope.
That's a battle Katie fights daily.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ray, for donating the stuff that you have donated to us. And again, contest@thereservepool.com to get things in for that. Please don't send them to mailbag. Some people did that for the last one. I did forward them along, and I'm happy to continue doing that so they go into the right virtual email bucket, if you will. But yeah, contest@thereservepool.com. Mm-hmm.
Are the rules getting you down? Us too. That's why it's time for Fact Talk.
All right, so for Fact Talk, we had a question sent to us by, I believe it was Dustin. And this is a good question, one that I think will be frequently asked, but one that, just looking at it, I suspect that we will find a pretty straightforward answer to. And the question was, how does Imprisoned interact with Nick Fury, Mr. Anger? Imprisoned, of course, is the basic action that we spoke about an episode or two ago, where where you get to basically capture some of your opponent's characters based on their fielding cost, up to a total cost of 2. And we really surmise that that means that you could capture an infinite amount of 0 fielding cost characters, or, you know, a 1 and a whole bunch of zeros, or whatever else.
2 ones.
Exactly. 2 ones, and probably a whole bunch of zeros then, too, because they don't add anything. So anyway, how would he interact with that? Nick Fury, Mr. Anger, of course, is the one that allows you to field Avengers characters for free. I think there's probably a straightforward answer to this, but I'll let you take it, Evan, and see if I agree.
Yeah, so Mr. Anger specifically says you can field them for free. He doesn't say their fielding cost is 0. He just says you can field them for free. So it's not actually changing the fielding cost. It's just letting you ignore it. So the fielding cost, I think, still remains what it is on the die. So that level 2 Hulk still has a fielding cost of 2, even with Mr. Anger out. You just get to ignore it because Nick Fury's a cool guy or something.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, given that, I think it still winds up only getting to capture what it says on the dice. You can't just say, oh, all Avengers are free, so they're all 0. Give me all your Avengers. I will put them in a box.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much how I feel there, too. He says you can feel them for free. He doesn't say that they can be 0, which, I mean, there's an important distinction. We also have the Captain America coming out that lets you field the next character for free. Because, you know, I think the other factor here is, too, that, think about in the case of Captain America, the next one is free. That doesn't mean that he's permanently changing the fielding cost in any way. And once he's on, once he or she, that whatever character you field, is on the table, you know, their fielding cost is what it says on that side that you rolled. It's not anything else. You don't have a way of, you know, tracking that specifically this one I put out for free. And, you know, of course, with Nick Fury, it's not while he's active your Avengers cost 0. It's just you can field them for free. So once they're on the table, it's whatever is printed on the die. You know, there's no change in state. if Nick Fury leaves the table for your Avengers that are already there, because they're already there, it doesn't modify anything on them. So I think it is a very good question. I think it's one that will be asked. But I do think that we have a pretty definite answer there. But I definitely thank you, Dustin, for writing in and asking this, because I think it is something that a lot of people will want to know.
Yep. Thank you, Dustin. I'm sure everybody has heard that, in at least in America, due to some shipping issues and possibly a strike. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Uncanny X-Men's been delayed by a week. So, you know, we'll have to do a little dance of, you know, when you have to go to the bathroom, just kind of like that, but for Uncanny X-Men, for just a little while longer. And I figure while we're doing that dance, we might as well talk about some of the cool things in the set. And, you know, super rares are cool, right?
They definitely are. Yeah, the delays are a pain. Actually, my... I got an email today from Amazon that the pre-order that I had in for Uncanny was canceled. They said you can get it maybe from other sellers. And now as I look and search, the only option that's there is now $5 over MSRP with $7 shipping costs. So that's fun. that's okay. I had the pre-order there because I needed to get it, you know, as fast as possible, because we have a show about it, but at this point I'll just wait till my...
I've actually not heard anything about my pre-order, and now I'm worried. It wasn't with Amazon, but
yeah,
I should make a phone call.
I'll just have to rely on my local gaming store, which I'm happy to do, and you know, Gravity Feed wise, you know, certainly that's where I'm going to play, so I'm going to throw them business of some kind, but you know, that's that is what it is. But yes, let us throw some love to the super rares, because I really do like them this time. As you might have noticed from the blog post that I made on Tuesday, which was called "Why I Like the Super Rares," I like them. They're good. And the thing that really sticks out to me this time is that none of them... they're all good. They all have useful abilities. They're all things that I think will be sought after. But none of them are absolutely essential. None of them are combos or win conditions in and of themselves. They are definitely pieces of the puzzle, not the full picture.
Yep. I mean, I think of the group, Scarlet Witch Controls Probability is probably the one most people are going to want.
Definitely.
Because it's just that safety net of, you know, okay, well, my Mr. Kills a Lot, who kills everything, rolled energy, and you have like 12 guys, and I kind of really needed him to roll energy, so here I roll again, and I roll him, and oh, he's energy, I lose the game. You know, this gives you one more time to, oh, he rolled energy again, and now I really lose the game. But, you know, but maybe you'll get lucky, and he'll roll a character face that third time, and Scarlet Witch will have saved you.
Yeah, and I think of a lot of cases where that maybe could have saved a game for me. But I think she does have a big drawback, and that's what you sacrifice in tempo to get her into play. If you're using Scarlet Witch, then you have spent, you know, the time and energy on your turn to buy her and then to field her. You know, she has just a one total fielding cost, so she has two free faces there. But that's still a die that wasn't energy or wasn't, you know, a part of your win condition. She's merely a helper. So I think she's a crutch, a very useful one, and I think she will be the most sought-after one here. But I don't know. I think there are plenty of games where it did come down to that die roll that I either did or did not get at the right time. And if I had her there, maybe that could have helped me win when I didn't. But at the same time, at that point, if I had her, I would be a turn behind.
Yeah, maybe you wouldn't be making that roll. So.
Exactly. Maybe I wouldn't even be in a position to win, because these turns can matter a lot. Dice Masters can be a chess match at times. And I can think of one game in particular that I played with my one game stint in the Reddit League before my life got swallowed up and I had to stop. But it was an excellent game, and it just came down to one turn where, you know, it was like two life to one life, and I just couldn't get the roll I needed for a storm, and that ended up being the game. I couldn't recover. And, you know, I probably would have been gone at that point if I didn't have you know, if I had taken the time for a Scarlet Witch.
Also, do notice that Scarlet Witch is not the most sturdy character. So, you know, it doesn't take all, especially on her level one phase, she's only got one defense. So, Human Torch, a stray pingy attack, who knows. That'll take her out, and she has to be active for you to get that bonus roll.
Oh my goodness, yes. I mean, how many times do we see where you're... How many times do we see where you're chasing that ideal board state where you're like, everything is going to line up, the stars are going to align, and then bam, a big combo. And I think there are a lot of people who would be too obsessed with making sure, oh, I need her back out because of what she does, and it's so special, where you kind of forget about your winning combination. So she's useful, but she doesn't, like, make a combination. She doesn't even become a part of a combination necessarily. She does even up the odds for you, and that can be key here. And I think if a lot of people are using her or something like her, then you can definitely justify having and fielding her. But she's not going to fit in all times because, you know, if you buy her early, you've sacrificed the tempo and getting into your win condition. If you buy her late, how useful will she really be? And how quickly can you actually get her out? Maybe the game's over before you can. So you're going to have to determine the efficiency of the purchase of that one. But I do think she'll be sought after. I mean, it's a cool ability.
Yep. No, it's definitely a neat ability and very in line with her. So, in fact, yep. I think all of these are fairly in line with, you know, the character.
But they also the character.
I have to question why the villain smacky face, the villain smacky Iron Man is called Industrialist. What does industrialism have to do with villains?
Yeah, I mean, thematically...
plenty, but... Well, maybe I've just and suddenly we're a political podcast.
Well, we won't go there. No, you're right. I mean, the other three super rares names are pretty thematic, right? Controls probability, that's what she does. Spider-Man superhero, well, it's the heroic form, of course it's called that. And Emma Frost Hellfire Club, well, she was, you know, a part of that.
I mean, Iron Man is definitely an industrialist.
Oh, he is, but it has nothing to do with the ability. I think, like, the superhero is the heroic one, controls probability, that's what she does. Hellfire Club, I mean, that's kind of her most aggressive ability, I suppose you could say. So, I mean, that makes sense, too. But industrialist, I smack down villains and make you a villain. Now, thematically, it makes sense.
In the name of capitalism.
Yes. Thematically, it makes sense with the characters, but... It doesn't make sense with the name. But I mean, that's such a, like, small...
You know, head of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever it was, head of the Defense Department or whatever it was for that time. I don't quite remember what it is. Or just, you know, leader of the Avengers. That would make sense, too.
Sure. And I mean, you know, it is the smallest of things. It's just kind of like, huh, that's weird.
Nits, they must be picked.
Yes. But, well, then, we've talked about Scarlet Witch. Why don't we talk about Iron Man then. So industrialist, you cancel all damage that villains deal to Iron Man. The burst phase, you double Iron Man's attack value while he is engaged with a villain. And the global, you pay one shield, target character gains the villain affiliation. So, I mean, it is a whole bunch of villain stuff, and that's appropriate in a set where we're dealing with the arch-villain characters, right? Where, you know, if you don't have a villain fielded, or if your opponent doesn't have a villain fielded, something bad will happen to them. Iron Man kind of plays again off of, you know, there are going to be villains here and let's deal with them.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think that's, it's a fairly useful ability. It does let you, but it is sort of one of those self-defeating globals where, you know, on the one hand, you know, giving yourself the ability to make things villain is really useful. It's really handy for this flavor of Iron Man. Obviously, you'll just sort of mash those characters. But, and you know, there's plenty of other cards. Nasty Boy, it basically means you can turn shields into damage during combat. But at the same time, it makes arch-villains kind of, if you're thinking, that Sentinel's pretty boss, I'm going to use arch-villain Sentinel. If you have this, you know, you can just sort of... So it's kind of not as... It kind of shoots you in the foot a little in that sort of sense. Things that require villains, or if your opponent has villains, means you can't really use those their full effect.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just plus if you, you know, you're bringing an arch villain and your character, you know, your opponent doesn't have it, now you have the global. It provides the means for your opponent to suddenly have a villain. You know, but at the same time, it lets you manipulate what Iron Man can do against villains. So it's a wash, but I think that's my favorite thing about the super rares is that they all do have a drawback to them. They're not just, you know, wholly 100% good on their own. There's something about each and every one of them that, you know, it might give your opponent pause for doing a specific action, but it also might give you pause for, you know, can I include it in this team? Does it really fit here? Whereas a lot of people would just find a way to fit Tsarina into a team in AVX or Gabi into a team in AVX as well. That's, you know, that's not going to be the case here. These are pieces, not, again, the full picture.
Right. So. And yeah, and the other two are both, you know, sort of anti-energy type characters. And both, I think, are pretty cool for what they do. Emma Frost is the you know, really offensive character of the super rares. And, well, I guess it's a little specific saying, well, if she gets hurt by a fist, which is a little tough to guarantee, then you basically take one of the damage off and do it to your opponent. But that's pretty cool. And honestly, with a lot of the cheaper characters being fists in this expansion, I think we'll see a good number of them for people trying to build up to their bigger characters.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, Emma Frost's stats aren't bad in their own right. And if you want her, you know, you're worried you won't see a fist across the table from you and you want her to be a little beefier, then simply run Ant-Man as well. And you have an excellent global that lets you switch the attack and defense of her. And now all of a sudden, instead of a, what is she on her top level, 5-7? Now yeah. She's 7-5. And bam, that'll hurt.
Yeah, I mean, not that a 5-7 is anything to sneeze at, but a 7-5 is that's something your opponent can't ignore.
Yeah, I mean, 2 points matter a lot in this game. That's 10% of your total, as we've talked about before when we dealt with, you know, globals like the Silver Surfer one, or of course some of those, you know, do this unless you pay 2 life. 2 life matters a lot, and if you can change it, then awesome. But yeah, the only direct damage option. Among the super rares here as well, whereas we saw 3 super rares with the ability to directly damage your opponent, and they were very willy-nilly, wide-open, damage everything. Emma Frost, you know, specifically deals with fists.
And it's only 1 damage, so...
Yeah.
Only.
It's annoying. It's gonna hurt, but it's something you can mitigate, and you have the abilities to do that in this set. Yeah, I do like her. I find her to be pretty interesting. I do like all of these. I mean, we still have one to talk about here, but yeah. But I do like all of these. Let's move on to that other one. This is Spider-Man. It's his superhero. So he's heroic then. When fielded, Spider-Man may pair up with a different heroic character until the start of your next turn. While Spider-Man is paired up, when he and or his partner are knocked out, each may deal its damage in attack to a bolt or mask character. Hey, that's okay. We have a lot of bolt and mask characters, and if you need to push somebody off the field for whatever reason, there's your opportunity.
Yep. And yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm seeing a lot of really powerful bolts, and masks are the weenie option this time, and there's several really good ones. So I mean, I'm saying, even if you're just saying, well, it's, you get, you know, 50% of the characters. Forgetting the fact that it's probably the two most useful, or the two most common energy types, or at least commonly played energy types, you know, I think that makes it pretty nice. And while dealing your attack and damage to something isn't necessarily wonderful, and it will really depend on who the partner is, you know, Spider-Man does have pretty good stats, especially for his two total fielding cost. So you can deal a decent chunk and knock out some pretty decent, you know, especially on his own, you can knock out up to mid-range characters. If you combine it with his partner, should be able to knock out pretty much anything.
Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to look through all of the characters here. Which heroic character do you think could provide the most meaningful pair for Spider-Man? I mean, one possibility that I, you know... First you think, oh, yay, but then you think, oh, never mind, you know, Captain America, when they're paired up, they both get +4 attack, which is great, but +4 defense, which doesn't really help if you're looking for your character to get knocked out and take advantage of this ability.
Similarly, Angel.
Yeah, Angel wouldn't help you here either.
Cyclops.
Yeah.
More damage. More damage to everything.
Cyclops is a thought. Maybe Marvel Girl. Let's do an order first. Cyclops here. I just saw him. Hang on a minute. Cyclops here. When paired up, he and his partner each deal 1 damage to the opponent when assigned to attack. I think that's a pretty good one, because all they have to do is assign to attack, and there's 2 damage because they each deal 1 damage. So Cyclops and then this Spider-Man. And then if they get knocked out or blown up, because you can control that as well, much like we would do with Nog in the last set, you have something there. Marvel Girl, maybe. When she's paired up, when she or her partner attacks, you may spin down 1 non-heroic character and gain 1 life. So throwing a little life gain into the mix, that's not really a bad call.
I think the best option, though, might be Wolverine. While Wolverine is paired up, he and his partner can only be blocked by 2 or more characters each.
That's a good one, and that was where I was going to go next to myself. That makes the most sense, and I believe that is... Yeah, that's on the superhero one, not the anti-hero. So that's a starter set one. Now, the only drawback here is this is a 6 cost, and Spider-Man here in question is a 5 cost. So, I mean, it's not going to be the cheapest thing to pull off, but... You do have Professor X to feed you some energy, so.
Yep.
Anything can be a turn 2 buy when you have Professor X, except for, those 7 costers. But yeah, that could be a good one. It can only be blocked by 2 or more characters each. So the likelihood of them getting knocked out is greater, so you'll definitely get this ability to trigger. I like Cyclops more because then you get something more out of it. But,
that's a little cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, it is too. The Wolverine's defense isn't so bad. I mean, he'll probably get knocked out or isn't so great. He'll probably get knocked out. And
he also has really great offense, but so does Cyclops. So
yeah. Yeah. I think there's going to be the only problem with the heroic thing is that, you got to have the heroes, to match them up with, those heroes have to be worth it too on the other side.
Right. Red Hulk is another decent option, though he's very expensive at 7.
Yeah, he really is. That would be fantastic, though. Red Hulk is also going to be difficult to have KO'd. I would almost say, I'm not even sure how to... I'm not even sure where to go there. It'd be great if you could have some kind of amalgamation of Red Hulk, Wolverine, and Spider-Man. But of course, there's a reason why that doesn't work that way.
Right. Clearly, there'll be a basic action like team up that will allow you to heroic 3 characters together.
That'd be pretty cool. I'd love to see that. It might get confusing with the teamwork and rally and team up and team this way, team down, yo.
Team,
I don't know.
Sideways.
Whatever that means. But yeah, I mean, again, looking at the big picture with these, they all have something to offer, but none of them are absolutely essential. I think everything that we see supports that this game is going to be more combo-y and, a little more long-term strategy rather than, short-term, get everything out and blast away with Sharina's ability or Gabi's sidekick destruction or whatever else. This is all going to be, your cards have to work together. It's going to be paying more attention to synergy, paying more attention to energy type, paying more attention to affiliation. And, all of those things are evident just from the 4 super rares.
Yep.
That's good.
Yeah. A little more variety, a little less homogenization.
Totally. To reiterate what we said before, this is pretty much exactly what we were saying we wanted to have happen. I love everything about this set. If you saw the Dice Towers review of the Uncanny X-Men set. You know, Tom gave it a 10. He's super enthusiastic about this game. If you like board games and you're not listening to the Dice Tower, I mean, we are in no way affiliated with them, but if you like board games and you're not listening to the Dice Tower, then I don't know what you're doing, frankly. Not everybody is going to like Tom or his opinions or anything else, but it's a good group of people they have who really just love the hobby and are doing things. Plus, Tom loves this game. So, I mean, come on. And some folks in the Dice Tower Network are also friends with Rodney Smith of Watch It Played, who, of course, probably taught a lot of us how to play this game before it was out. I mean, just so many good things over there. So if you like more than just Dice Masters, if you're big into gaming in general, if you have a shelf like the one I have behind me as I record this, I mean, check out the Dice Tower. But yeah, he gave it a 10 out of 10. I mean, he raved about it. He loves the new characters, the new combinations, and a lot of different things about this. And I can't argue. I mean, he gave it a higher rating than he did Avengers versus X-Men, if I remember correctly. All right. Well, everybody, that is about it for us today. This is a little bit of a shorter episode, but we're taking it easy with the delay. And please contribute to the contest. Let us hear some things on the mailbag. We did get a lot of responses to our storage solutions discussion, which we'll be happy to share with you soon. We did not forget that we do have to get some of those more detailed contest responses up on the blog, as we promised last time. So that will happen. I'm sorry. I'll own that mistake. I completely forgot to get it done. But that will happen. Also, some storage solutions, some neat pictures that we have to share with you guys. We're really looking forward to getting all of that out there. We'll have the next in the series of other games you might also like. Of course, we already talked about Sentinels of the Multiverse, which is an incredibly fun superhero-based game. We're going to talk about maybe a dice game next. But yeah. So thank you so much, as always, for spending some time with us. We really appreciate that. And we will see you again in a week on the Reserve Pool.
Yep. See you in a week, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Evan?
Boop. You can't see it, but I pressed my nose. I had nothing to comment. I had nothing to say to that.
You can't see it, but I pressed my nose.
And we have our quote for the week, don't we?
I don't know.